Hey there, friends. Welcome back to Work Less, Earn More. I have a question for you. Have you ever considered raising funding from investors to grow your business? It's been something I've considered doing off and on over the years, but ultimately decided it wasn't quite the right move for my business. But if I did want to raise funding, honestly, I haven't the first idea where to start. And that's why I am so excited to share today's episode with you. I've brought on the owner of a very successful physical product company called Curl Mix. The owner's name is Kimberly Lewis, and she has raised over $10 million from investors over the 10 years of building her business. And she has quite a lot of interesting stories to share about different investors she's raised money from at different times. So she's coming on the show today. I'm going to ask her all the questions about exactly how she raised this money, how she decided it was the right move for her. And she's also going to share with us some of her stories of how she's raised this money, as well as her best advice for how to decide if raising money from investors would be the right move for your business, as well as how to go about doing that. This is a good one, and I know you're really going to enjoy it. We became entrepreneurs because, more than anything, we want freedom. We want to be in control of our own schedule, income, and life. But unfortunately, that isn't always the reality of being a business owner. I'm Gillian Perkins, and I'm on a mission to take back entrepreneurship for what it's supposed to be. In every episode, I'll share with you how to get the most out of every hour you work so that you can work less and earn more. Let's get to it. Kimberly Lewis, so I hear that you recently raised over $1 million in funding for Curl Mix. That is incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Gillian. I appreciate that.
That's a huge accomplishment. So I'm so curious, what led you to the decision of deciding to raise this funding? Why did you need this money to be able to grow Curl Mix?
So it's so funny, Gillian. I've actually raised a little over $10 million for my business and through different facets. So the first money I got in was like an angel check from Arlen Hamilton from Backstage Capital. She was the first Black woman to grace the cover of Fast Company. She wrote me a $25,000 check for my business back when we were on our way to making our first $1 million back in 2018 or so. And then we went on Shark Tank in 2019 and I raised $1.2 million from the former CEO of LinkedIn, Jeff Weiner, and his partners. And then I went on to raise a Series C for about $5 million after that. And most investors, even though we went from $1 million to $5 million in revenue in a matter of a year, they were all like, we want to see more. And this is before 2020, before George Floyd and all the things. And so I was like, you know, what can I do to raise my own money? I have 100,000 customers. I don't have to wait for someone else to think I'm important to give me an investment from institutional VCs. And that's when I went to crowdfunding for the first time in 2021. And we raised $4.5 million from about 7,000 customers. And I came back to crowdfunding because it gives you more control of the business. And I think it's more important for your customers to own equity in the business than some stranger who's already rich to help them make them richer. And so that was always my plan. So funding there. But then you may ask, you know, why do you think you even need funding? How'd you know? Initially, it was not my plan to raise money for Curl Mix. Initially, my plan was to build a $1 million business that gave me passive income so I could travel. That was the plan. And somewhere along the way, I got excited about the idea of being a venture-backed product-based business. And there aren't many that are super successful, but there are some. There are definitely some that have raised tens of millions of dollars and grown yourself for hundreds of millions or even $1 billion. I can name a few if you want me to later. But I saw that that had the biggest outcome to impact most people. And I wanted to make as many people wealthy with Curl Mix as I possibly could, so my team included. And I was like, if I want this to be uber successful, like a Shea Moisture that sold for $1.6 billion to Unilever, or Maya that sold for over $600 million to Procter & Gamble, or a Curl Swift that sold for $150 million to, I think Unilever, they sold to Helen of Troy, I think it was. And so I learned about these mega acquisitions that happened. And I didn't know about those before when I started Curl Mix. Like I kind of heard about it, but like it wasn't as clear and center in front of me. And when I learned more about this, I was like, oh, there's a much bigger opportunity here versus me just making enough income to travel, which is kind of more of a selfish goal. And I was like, what can I do to kind of impact my community and my friends and family and help us all get a bit more money? Because what good is first class if the homies can't sit, okay? Well, according to J. Cole, one of my favorite rappers. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to raise money so that you can basically invest in this company and grow bigger faster. Now, not everyone needs to raise money. One, I knew that in order to raise money, you have to have a sellable business, something that you can transfer to someone else. Typically, it has to be profitable. And you have to have 10 to 15% EBITDA or earning before income tax, depreciation, whatever their long acronym is for, and all these different things. But if you're like, no, I just want to make an extra couple hundred thousand, maybe extra couple million a year for my family so I don't have to work as hard or as much as my children. I can put money away from them. I can pay for college, all these things. You don't need to raise money for your business at all. It's really if you want to go bigger, faster. And what I mean by fast, what I like to use as an example is like there's this brand called Telfar. And this founder has been building this fashion brand for about 20 years. And it just recently hit, I want to say, over 30 million in the last 5 years. And he never raised money for it. So for the longest, it was doing six figures annually. And it was his custom made, handcrafted leather tote bags. Never raised money for it. And that was totally fine. And now it's over $30 million. And it's probably a profitable business. It's in fashion really, really well. Never took any investors. But you compare that to a Fenty Beauty by Rihanna, right? I think she worked with Kendall Brands to produce that brand. They own half of it, I believe. She might own more than half, but somewhere around that, she raised tens of millions, I think maybe $100 million for Fenty Beauty because she has dozens of shades for lipsticks, for foundations, for all that. Maybe she couldn't afford all that stuff by herself. So she's worked for a partner to go and help buy that inventory, develop that brand. And she raised money to grow it very quickly. Fenty Beauty is a $1 billion brand in less than 6 years, which is kind of crazy, right? But she has a lot more cooks in the kitchen. She couldn't have gotten there on her own without a partner like a Kendall Brands. So big and fast, create more wealth for everybody, raise venture capital. Kind of, and if you want to go alone and further, maybe you're doing it for 20, 30 years and that's okay. Does it have to be $1 million in the first 5 years? Then you don't have to raise capital. And honestly, what I have come to, raising capital isn't better than the other, right? Because it's also higher risk. Because you could still fail when you raise that amount of money. You can still fail if you have a very, very big business. Why? Because bigger businesses have bigger bills. And so that's something I'm very, very mindful of. But yes, so that's how you know if you need to raise capital. And that's how I knew I wanted to raise capital for CurlMix.
So what specifically did the money mean for CurlMix? What did it enable you to do? How did it enable you to grow so much faster than you could have without it?
Yes, that's a great question. So after we raised the $4.5 million equity crowdfunding, we ended up doing about $10 million in revenue in 2022. And that money allowed us to be able to, one, move into our own manufacturing facility. So we make something called flaxseed gel, where we are boiling the raw flaxseeds and extracting the gel and putting it in a bottle to help when we get this curling style you kind of see here on my head. The manufacturers would not do that for us. They were like, this is too laborious. This is too variable because we're literally boiling organic seeds and extracting the gooey gel from it. They wouldn't do it for us. So we were kind of in like these different incubator units in this manufacturing facility. And it was really inefficient. We had five different units across two buildings. And we have to make product on one building and then ship it across the street to the other building. And then take it up three flights of stairs or three floors, take it to the back of the building to pack it up. It was just a huge waste of time and a huge suck on our money. And we're like, we need one place where we can make everything ourselves. So that was one. We moved to a bigger, more singular, more efficient manufacturing facility. Two, we also rebranded. So CurlMix used to look kind of hodgepodgey. Like we had the labels that I made myself back in 2018. And so we were able to have professionally made bottles that are tubes that seal at the top with a really unique looking brand and just like a cohesive look and feel to the brand. And then the third thing, we were able to launch into retail. So we launched into 460 doors in Ulta on end caps, which is like prime real estate, something I'm super proud of. And also had been wanting us in the stores for about 3 or 4 years since we aired on Shark Tank. But we were like, we don't want to do that. We're not ready yet. And we were able to do that with that investment. And so this time around, I am still using the cash that we're raising to grow the brand, but I want to grow it more profitably. So I'm less focused on growth, and, you know, having losses. I'm more focused on profitably growing, even if it takes me a bit longer to return the capital to my investors.
Well, that makes so much sense. And it's easy to see how that was so helpful to you to be able to grow the brand so much bigger, so much more quickly. So take me back to when you first launched CurlMix. I'm really curious about when you did your first round of funding. You mentioned that you got a check from an investor. How did you go about getting that first investment?
So in the very beginning, I knew I was going to be able to get money from investors unless I was already making money. Some people get investment dollars for ideas on the back of a napkin, but I feel like that's not women. And then we're not Black women. And I say this because women, we were getting 3% of all venture capital as of 2021, and that actually decreased in 2022. It went down to 1.9%. So we got even less. And there are trillions of dollars in the venture capital realm. For us to get less than 3% or less than 1.9% is absolutely insane. And then Black women get 0.003%, some crazy number. I was like, so I knew in order to raise $1 million, I was going to have to make $1 million. So the very first check that I got for $25,000, my business was probably making $140,000 annually. And we were a do-it-yourself box for curly hair. So think like Blue Apron, but for hair. And then we pivoted the business to focus on flaxseed gel. But in doing that, I was going to all the free pitch competitions. And I mean, all of them. Even though I was on Shark Tank and I turned down $400,000 for 20% equity stake from Robert Herjavec, I have never won money at a pitch competition. And I've probably done 50 or more. So most people are kind of shocked when they hear me say that. But that's how many I was going to. I was paying for my own flights, my own hotels to go pitch my company at these places. And oftentimes I'd be making more money than the people I was pitching against. But pitch competitions are about how sexy you sound. They're not necessarily about who has the best business, which is unfortunate. But that is the case. It is a pitch competition. But honestly, the pitch competitions are really just lead gen for investors who want to find good companies to invest in. And so I was going to all these different pitch competitions. And I would take business cards, pictures of business cards I would get from either people in the audience or other people who were pitching or the judges, or sometimes there would be investors in the audience, angel investors, people they want to write 20K checks to, 50K checks to, 100K checks to. And I would compile a little newsletter of maybe 20 people who were like serious or really, really interested. And I would send them a monthly update and say, hey, this is our revenue for the month. These are our trailing 3 months revenue. Here's our big three biggest wins, three biggest challenges for the month. And here's what I hope you're working on. And then that'll be it. And I would send them another one. So I did this for about 12 months. And along the way, I met Arlen from Arlen Hamilton of Backstage Capital. I saw an event they were having in California. It had to be, I don't know, it was like $40 to get into the event. It was in the basement of some tech incubator. It's so funny because it was like not a fancy event. And this is in 2017. Arlen's super famous now, but she wasn't back then. It was one of her first events. And I essentially went to that event, met her, and she's like, I don't have the money today, but I want to invest in your company. And within 6 months, she wrote me a check for $25K, and I had included her on that newsletter. And I kept up that newsletter after she gave me the $25K until I got my first $1 million check from Jeff Weiner, former CEO of LinkedIn. And then I did that for a little while longer when I went to go raise a $5 million round, but I couldn't really pull it together from investors. And so I stopped after that. But if you want to raise money from investors, you got to make that investor newsletter. You absolutely have to.
I think you kind of breezed over the fact that you went to 50 pitch competitions, but clearly you were putting in the work. You were doing the grind, weren't you? Like, that's really what led to that first investment. And, you know, all the investments after that was you were going out there and you were pitching your company to a lot of investors.
Yes, it's a numbers game. I mean, think about it the way you think about leads, right? You can't get 100 sales if you don't get at minimum, 1,000 people to your landing page.
Yeah, at absolute minimum. Yeah.
Because that's a 10% conversion. So you probably need 10,000, right? If you're thinking about the 1% conversion you normally have. And I think of investment the same way. If you're going to get one investor, you probably got to pitch 100, you know?
How much did going to those 50 pitch competitions do for your sales? Was it pretty effective or were you only going for to try to get an investor?
Just investors. My customers weren't at these events. And that's because my customers are Black women over 40. So we typically aren't the investors. At these events, I'm pitching people who don't look like me, who don't have hair like me, who sometimes don't even know what I do. I remember one time an investor asked me, is there a possibility that you could use all the flax seeds in the world? And I was like, what? And of course, it was like an older guy who had to be like 70 plus. And I was like, oh, he has no clue what I'm talking about. And I was just like, oh my gosh, you know? So no, I was not getting sales from these events. I was just getting investors.
What gave you the confidence or the motivation to keep going to pitch events after you'd been rejected essentially 20, 30, 40 times? You know, you hadn't been able to get an investor. Did you think, was it because your business's financials were improving and you thought your chances were getting better and better or something else?
So that's true. We were growing on paper. So our revenue was increasing. You know, I am not as sensitive to rejection as most people are. And, you know, that might sound like a good and bad thing, right? You know, you don't know when to call it quits, you know, so you're a little delusional. But I would say too, so yes, my numbers were increasing. And then I would always get like a little win. What is it? You may not win the battle, but you won the war type of thing. So like all my pitch competitions are losing the battles, right? But like eventually I won the war. And so at one event, I might find one investor who was like really interested and kind of leads me on, but doesn't actually invest. But they let me know that I had something. So I got that. Just like if you worked in Expo, I used to work Expos back in the day with a DIY box. And I would talk to a customer for 10 minutes and then she would not buy. And I was like, dang it. Like, I just wasted my time talking to her. But then you talk to someone, say, hey, we're the do-it-yourself box. And she would like snatch it out of my hand and hand me the cash before I could finish my pitch. And I was like, oh, so you really got to know when you're talking to the right person. So know your mark, right? So when it came to investment conversations, I didn't see me not getting invested the first 10 times. It's like, oh, I'm not investable. It really taught me how to refine my pitch and know my mark. So know when I'm talking to an investor who's interested in what I'm offering. So I'll give you an example. When we were the do-it-yourself box, we were a vitamin and not a painkiller. Many of us have businesses that are like nice to have for people, but people were still going to buy ready-made products when we had the do-it-yourself box because it was novelty. It was novel and not necessity. And then when we switched to the flaxseed gel, they were buying that hand over fist and they were so excited because they needed to do their hair and they needed it to look presentable for work. And they're willing to send the same exact price for that item. And I was like, oh, this is a necessity. They need to look good for work. And so it was the same with the investors. It was the same at the expo. And so I didn't take the no's as like, oh my God, they hate me. I got better at pitching, which then makes something that seems impossible, like crowdfunding from 7,000 investors, really hard. Actually, really not easy, but it's easy for me to talk to people about my company and raise money from the public because I have no problem sharing this information, right? But if I had never gone to the 50 pitch competitions, the expos, then I'm the Washing Go Wednesdays live where I'm doing my hair in the shower for my customers, fully clothed for an hour and a half. If I wasn't doing that for 2 years, then I might have a really hard time talking to you right now on this podcast about investors and investing and things like that and talking to investors. But I feel like this is the easy part of my job.
Yeah, I feel like the learning experience part of business growth is so underrated. Sometimes when I teach people growth strategies, they get disappointed if they don't get the growth immediately. And I have to tell them and coach them so much on how valuable the experience has been and how it might take 2 or 3 or 50 times. But every time it's not just that they failed, it's that they learned so much. And that is what will eventually lead to the success with whatever they're doing. And I think that your story is such a great example of that.
Thank you.
So since we are kind of talking about, you know, those early days in your business when you got your first investment, let's take just a little bit of a side path here, a little bit of a rabbit trail. I'm just really curious how you initially were growing your physical product business. How are you making your first sales? How are you connecting with your first customers over the first couple of years before you got that first investment?
That's such a good question. And there are two things that I did. And I think two things you can do now. One of the things that didn't exist back in the day is live video. I know that sounds so silly. It's like, what do you mean didn't exist back in the day? There was no Facebook Live back in 2013, 2014, 2015, right? Facebook Live came somewhere around, I want to say 2018, I want to say.
And ish, so yeah,
2018-ish. So before that, I was paying a couple $1,000 to go and exhibit at these expos. So that would mean I'm lugging all my products to a place where there are going to be lots of people. And the reason that's important is because when you go to these expos, there are sometimes tens of thousands of people showing up to shop, right? You just got to be positioned in the right location at the right time with nice enough display to get people to come to your booth. And I maybe would spend $2,000 and maybe I would make $10,000, $15,000 in a weekend. And it teaches you about average order value. It teaches you about the pain points of your customer. It teaches you about how long you can speak to someone, right? Like if you can only talk to each person for 5 minutes, that means you can only get a max of 15 sales an hour. So then you might need one or two more people helping you represent the business, right? And then if they don't have the right pitch, they're not going to sell as much as you. So then you know that you're the person who ends up selling the most. So maybe you talk to two or three people at a time. So it just teaches you, to me, it teaches you sales at the very basic level. And if you can't do that, you can't get to expos, you're in the middle of Oregon, you know, you're in some rural town, you can't get there, then going live is the way you show up in an expo. Mm-hmm. Right? You have one person live, you talk to that one person just like you would be at an expo. And if you have 100 people live, then that's even better because you're able to talk to 100 people and refine your sales pitch. And you know when they log off. I had a friend, Sassy Jones, from, she used to do this thing it's called Sparkle Party, but she would go live every Wednesday or Thursday, I believe it was, for an hour. And she would show up all her accessory jewelry. the earrings, the makeup, the lashes she sold, this. And I think her business ended up doing a little over $20 million. And she was not spending crazy on ads at all. And I know she was profitable. And I was just like, this is crazy, you know? And she was just going live talking to her customers, selling, you know, custom jewelry and things like that. And so I'm like, that's the, one of the best examples I have of like, okay, having the gift of gab and going live. The other thing that I was doing that first month after we pivoted the business and we closed down all the boxes, I had 6 months of boxes lined up. So I was 7 months pregnant, making 50 different batches of flaxseed gel in my kitchen in 2017. We decided to pivot the business and I literally cut off all my subscription boxes. I had maybe 15,000 monthly revenue of subscription boxes. I canceled all of it because I was like, well, people aren't buying this. My best customers boxes that start to stack up. And so that January, we pivoted the business. The first month was $3,000 in sales. That second month was $8,000 in sales. And I was like, man, if we can get back to 16,000 in that March, we'll be doing amazing. And we ended up doing 30,000. And what we did to go from that 8 to that 30,000 was revenue sharing with micro influencers. This was before you even had a link out on Facebook. You could not link to your website, your this, your that. You could only have the link in your bio, right? And anybody who wants to link out in their stories, you had to have over 10,000 followers. So we made $30,000 of micro influencers, no revenue sharing, without the link out in your stories. And what we did was we gave them custom codes and we did 30% of sales went to some of the stylists. And I had one stylist who brought in about $6,000 on her own because her audience really trusted her. And we had a dollar on Facebook ads, by the way, for that $30,000. So that was like my first lesson in influencer marketing and revenue sharing. And influencers, they would earn, I think their customers would get 20% off and they would earn 15 to 20, I believe it was. And then stylists would earn like 30. But that was like some of the first ways that I made money in my business before we did our first $1 million.
Thank you so much for sharing. So much to learn from your experience. And that's really interesting. So now let's kind of jump forward a little bit. So you mentioned that you managed to get, did you say $1 million from Jeff Weiner? Is that right? How did that come about?
To be fair, he put in half of it. His partner put in the other half, his business partner. So what happened was Arlen, who put in that $25,000, she was raising her fund at the time as well. And so she raised a multi-million-dollar fund to invest in Founders of Color because we underfunded. You heard the 0.003%. And so in that time, I was sending her that monthly newsletter. And I had been sending it to Arlen for over a year. And this is after she put in the $25,000. And I basically told her, I was like, hey, I'm going on Shark Tank and I got a month to fund this inventory. I don't know where, how I'm able to fund this. Do you know anyone who can write a $200,000 check? Or I think it was $100,000. She's like, I know one person, but I'm not so sure. He'll give you a quick answer, if anything. And so she put me in touch with him. And I got on the phone with him. I had 3 minutes. He was in Kenya and he had shoddy cell service. So he couldn't even talk long. And so I had 3 minutes to pitch him my business over the phone. He's like, what's your CAC? What's your LTV? What's your this? Like, he's literally like just hitting me with question after question after question. And I was like, when did I even know this stuff? You know? And then he was like, all right, I'll do the deal. $100,000. I was like, okay. And then he was like, do you mind if my partner comes in on the deal? I was like, who's your partner? He's like, Jeff Weiner. I'm like, who's that? He's like, the CEO of LinkedIn. I was like, oh, sure. Jeff can definitely come in on the deal. And so then hang up. They give him the 200K. They buy it. We fund the deal. We go on Shark Tank. And Jeff sees the episode with his wife. He was like, honey, I think we invested in that company. And he forgot, which I think is so funny. I was like, one day I'm going to have that kind of wealth. I'll forget the investments that I make. I love it. No, Jeff's a great guy. Love Jeff. I have nothing negative to say. Jeff's been amazing. And so he calls me up. He's like, the sharks are crazy for not giving her a deal. So him and his business partner wrote me a $1 million check for the business. And they gave me a much higher valuation than Robert Hirschvik. I think Robert Hirschvik wanted to give me like a $2 million valuation. And Jeff and his business partner gave me, I want to say, an $11 million valuation.
Wow. You have so many good stories.
Thank you.
That's what comes from living it in the trenches, isn't it?
Yes, I was definitely in the trenches.
Hey, I'm going to interrupt this episode for just a second to tell you about a brand new free training that I just created and am super excited about. Okay, so here's the backstory. Last Saturday, I sat down at my computer, I fired up Loom, and I recorded 4 screen share videos to hack my funnel for you. Basically, if you've ever wondered how my business generates so much passive income, you are about to find out in these 4 videos. In the first one, I take you through my entire funnel, blow by blow, start to finish, so you can see how it automatically turns a lead into a paying customer. Then in video two, I break down in detail our win-win webinar strategy, because the webinar is a pivotal point in the funnel, and it is what converts about half the leads that get converted. Then in the third video, I take you one by one through our sales email sequence. So I actually break down the individual emails for you. I talk about the cadence that we send those emails at and what is included in each email so that you can backwards engineer my funnel and understand how this system works. Okay, and then finally in video number four, I explained the big picture strategy of the 100K method and how you can implement this whole system into your own business. To get access to this free four-video behind-the-scenes training and understand how my whole funnel works, all you need to do is go to GillianPerkins.com/BTS for behind the scenes, okay? GillianPerkins.com/BTS. You can enter your name and email there, and I will send you the link to be able to watch all four of those videos for free. You're going to love this. It is going to really show you how you can build a system like this in your own business so you can start passively generating income by passively turning your visibility into sales in your business. You are going to love this, and it is going to be such a game changer for you to be able to understand how you can build a system like this in your own business. So now let's jump forward and talk about some of your most recent rounds of funding. You mentioned that you've been leaning into crowdfunding, and I think you mentioned something about raising, do you say, 1 million from 7,000 customers? What was your strategy there? How did that work?
So the first time we crowdfunded in 2021, we raised 4.5 million from 7,000 customers. This recent crowdfund that we currently have open that closes April 1st, we have about 1,300 investors, I want to say, or maybe a little less, and we raised a little over $1 million so far. But the way crowdfunding works is really like a really good marketing campaign. Besides the back end, in my opinion, is the hard part. When you raise from the public, you have to file a Form C with the SEC, which basically says, these are my financials for the last 2 years in GAAP format, which is basically generally accepted accounting principles. And so essentially, this is what the standard is across all business, what your financials should look like and how they should be structured if you are making more than $5 million in revenue and you're a business entity in the United States, right? So I had to have GAAP financials. And what you find is that most businesses are on a cash-based accounting. They are actually not in GAAP. And so for us, having been a manufacturing company, as well as an e-commerce company, going from, you know, 1 to 5 to 10 million revenue, some years, and pretty much our stuff was in cash, right? In cash accounting. So we had to convert our accounting from cash to GAAP. That was one. And then two, we had to go through an audit. And the audit is not cheap. So normally an audit is like a scary thing for people. And so going through my first audit was kind of terrifying. But the thing is, as long as you're not doing anything fraudulent, you're likely past your audit. So now that I know that, audits aren't really scary. They're just more like, oh, this is going to take a few months. Or, oh, this is like cumbersome or taxing. It's exhausting for everyone involved. But it's so good because I think it professionalizes the business in a way that it's needed. And it also provides your investors trust in your financials and your accounting and what they're looking at, right? And so you have to go through all this accounting, which took us about 6 months. And then you file with the SEC. And once you file with the SEC, then you can start to raise money from the public. And it's so funny because there's so much monitoring around crowdfunding, but the government will let you go and blow $50,000 at the casino. Nobody cares, you know? But when it comes to raising money from crowdfunding, there's like all this due diligence. And so that's like the back end. And then when it comes to actually raising that money, this is where I say you have to do like the politicians, shaking hands and kissing babies, but except you're doing it online. Which means that you're answering every single comment on Instagram, on the WeFunder landing page, on your LinkedIn account, on Instagram, on your Facebook, in your Facebook groups. Like because every comment could be a $100 investment or a $250 investment. And so I've taken it on as my job as the founder, because my job is fundraising, to be the one responding to all those comments and engaging with people. So I actually have this massive campaign document that lists out all the platforms that we have assets on, right? So whether it might be Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, whatever, how many followers we have on each. And then if I converted a percentage of them, so 0.01% per platform, right? And then the average crowdfunding investment is about $700, or I think maybe it's $500, but for our last round, it was around $700. And so then I back it out. If I want to raise $5 million, I divide that by $700, and that tells me how many investors I need. And based on all my platforms, I know whether or not I have enough people on my platform to get that number of investors I actually wrote an article in Inc. magazine about this. So if you want to go through the formula, definitely go check it out. But basically, you need a crowd. So I tell people, if you don't have a crowd, you should not crowdfund, because essentially you're talking to crickets. You know what I mean? And then we also have 200,000 customers. So even if I got a fraction of my customers to invest, if I got 7,000 of them to invest, then I would have raised my investment. So you make this Excel document, and then you list off a series of actions that you're going to do every day. On the launch day, all the way to close. You'll get 30% of your investment when you launch. People are excited about it. You'll get 30% in the middle, and you get 30% in the last couple of days when you close, which is kind of scary because some people are like, oh, I think I'm only, you know, I wanted to raise 5 million, but I only got to 1 million. So I'm probably only going to land at 1.5. But the thing is, in the final days, in my last crowdfund, I raised almost $2 million in the last, I don't know, 72 hours. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy because so many people wait to the last minute. You guys know, especially timers, those clocks on the landing pages. Yes. And so that's how crowdfunding is. It's a huge marketing campaign. Lots of communication, lots of commenting, especially publicly. And then, of course, there's like press involved. And then you, of course, once I knew how many investors I needed, I also started breaking them out. How many people could I get to give me $1,000? How many people could I get to give me $10,000? How many people could I get to give me $25,000? For us, I've taken a more customer approach, getting more of those smaller checks of 500 or 1,000 and trying to get as many of those. But some people take an approach where they ask really all their rich friends to put in 25K or 100K and like they get to their number that way. There's two different ways to, I don't want to say skin a cat, it's a bad phrase. two different ways to peel an orange.
So what is your value proposition to your crowdfunding investors?
So there are lots of acquisitions in the beauty space. I mentioned Shea Moisture for $1.6 billion back in 2017, 2018. I want to say the numbers of the year is. Maya also for over $600 million at the top of 2022, I believe. Curl Smith, $150 million. Main Choice for almost $100 million. And so these are just like, these are typical acquisitions. There's one every year or every other year in the curly hair space. And Curl Mix is one of the ones where I like next up as far as brand equity goes. And I say brand equity, people who are known in the space, we just haven't entered retail by choice. And so acquisitions happen in my space often, right? I want my customers to be able to own a piece of the brand so that when we sell or IPO, they can get a return as well. Now, of course, this is crowdfunding, so you can't guarantee a return, right? Like we could fail. We are a startup. We could go out of business. Who knows? It could be another pandemic. Although the pandemic helped us financially. So, you know, but I mean, because more people made more money online because everybody was in the house having a shop online. But anything could happen, right? So we could fail. So I never want to promise that. So I always tell people, don't give me your mortgage money. If you're never going to be paying mortgage, so you invest in your crowdfund, that is not what I want you to do, okay? This is if you have money you can play with, money you can afford to lose, money that you want to invest and hope so for 2-3x return on. Now, I can't guarantee these results, right? But I'll tell you what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get the business to a minimum of $30 million. Get the business to $30 million in annual revenue profitably with 10 to 15%. EBITDA, you can see a 3-5x multiple on revenue, especially if you have good brand equity. So that means if we get to $30 million, we could sell for $150 million, and which means that could be like a 3-4x based on our current valuation and crowd right now. So if you put in $250, maybe you can get $750 back, maybe $1,000 back. And the way it works is it's through a special purpose vehicle. So when you put the money in a WeFunder, WeFunder goes on my cap table or my list of investors as an entity that owns maybe 10% of the business. And so then when we sell or IPO or public and we get money for that 10%, whoever is acquiring us, we get the money back to WeFunder. And then WeFunder will disperse it to all of our investors who invested at that time at that valuation with that multiple. And so the idea is that just the way you would invest in your 401k and make money over the next 10 years, that's the hope with crowdfunding. You invest in my campaign or my round right now, and then in 5 to 10 years, you're hoping to see a return.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for breaking that all down because this is all new to me. I know nothing of this world. So it's very interesting. I'm curious, this may be a dumb question, but like I said, I know nothing. So if you never IPO or never sell, then is there any way for your investors to get their money back?
No, which that's not my goal. So yeah. I realize that I am hanging my credibility on this, right? So yeah. If I don't have a good result in the next 5 to 10 years, that makes me look bad. And my reputation matters to me more than anything. So I'm 32. This will not be the last thing that I do. So no, there's no way to get your money back if I don't IPO or sell. Mm-hmm. Well, there is another way. I could get money from the banks at a higher valuation. Maybe they could own a piece of the company and they pay me back cash out and I could pay out my investors. So that is one way. But I'm not trying to do that, right? I realize time is of the essence. So I was of the essence, and I want to make sure I was give you guys a return really within 3 to 5 years. It's my goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to explain crowdfunding a bit more too, because people are like, well, what is crowdfunding? There's crowdfunding for rewards, right? There's the Kickstarters, the GoFundMes, the Indiegogos, where people are just getting like a t-shirt or they're getting something cute. It's like, thank you for your donation, right? And then there's crowdfunding for equity. People are buying real shares in the company, just like you would if you go, let's say you have a Schwabic account and you want to invest in your brokerage account, something like that. And you're going to go buy equity in Apple or an Uber or whatever, like you might be doing that. What crowdfunding is it allows everyday citizens to be able to invest early in startups, whereas we couldn't have a decade ago. So if you ever wanted to invest in an Uber or an Apple or Nike before they went public, you couldn't, unless you had a net worth of $2 million or more. You're an accredited investor. And so basically crowdfunding says, you don't have to have $2 million in net worth. You don't have to make $250,000 a year. You can make $50,000 a year and invest $100, $200 into a company and be an early angel investor. And it was done under the 2012 Jobs Act. So that is what crowdfunding is. And it just allows everyone to be able to participate in angel investing.
Thanks for explaining that. Yeah, I didn't know that either. So that's very cool. So we are running out of time, but I do have a couple more questions for you. So what is your best advice for entrepreneurs who want to raise funding? Where should they start?
I think entrepreneurs should start with their number for the lifestyle that they want to have, and not just some, I want to have a $10 million in my bank account. Like, what are you going to do with the $10 million? Because what I've learned is that when you sell your company, the advice you get is just to invest. Invest so you can get more and get more and get more. And it's like, well, what are you doing with the more? Do you have more time? Are you going to more places to travel? Are you spending more time with your family? What is the more? And what I'm learning now is that the more for me was always travel. And you'll lose sight of your goal if the goal is always just more and it's not actually to do something with the more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So for someone who thinks they want to raise money, I really would challenge them to think personally about their personal goals and their personal plans for their life and then map that out financially, right? I had a financial planner tell me most people really just need to make 25 times their current income to be happy, to have everything that they actually really want for themselves. So that means if you're making $100,000 a year, 25 times 100,000, is that like 2.5 million? And that's probably what you need, right? And so then you want to build a business that you can sell and sell for $3, $4, $5 million. And so then I think maybe you don't need to raise money for that. That might take you 5 years to build that business and then build something that's sellable that someone else can buy off your hands. A lot of times we might build personal brand businesses and those really you can't sell, right? And that's okay. Those are income generating businesses. Maybe they're helping you generate income so you can go and buy assets in other businesses that are faceless that you can then resell when they grow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think you want to raise money, figure out your personal financial goals and then back into it. Now, if you say, no, Kim, girl, I'm going for the billion, okay? I need to get to the billion. That for my ego, for other women out there, there are so few of us who raise $1 billion or build $1 billion companies or unicorns. I want to be one of those. We need to do that for the culture. Then I say, okay, great. You do need to raise money. Now let's think about how much equity you want to give up. Are you okay with owning 20% of the company? You know, because eventually if you're successful at raising money, that's typically where you land. If it's successful at raising $50 million, you're probably going to end up with 20% equity in the company. Mark Zuckerberg is an anomaly. I think he owns like 25% of Facebook, which is crazy. Like everybody else, if you look at the equity owned by like the top 100 companies or something like that, a lot of founders have like 1% to 5%. So once you go on this journey of raising $50, $100 million, whatever, you're not going to own the company, so you're not going to have that control, right? Whereas this other scenario where you go slower, you self-fund, whatever, you have more control of the business. So figure out if you're okay with not owning as much. And then if you say, yes, girl, I want to be the billion-dollar company. Yes, girl, I'm okay with not owning, you know, 50% of the company. I'm okay with only being a 20% owner. What impact do you want to have on the world? Because you could be like the founder of Keurig, who created these little mini cups for all the coffee, and he regrets it. You know what I mean? He feels like those are one of the worst things he could have done for the environment and the planet, right? So making sure you're building something that you want. Let's say you're successful at being a $1 billion business, but you're like killing the planet. Then you may not be happy about that, right? So make sure you do something that you think matters. And then I would say, okay, now let's circle and find investors who invest in my category because people's investors are really our category specific. Like I have Cleveland Avenue is one of my investors, right? They invest in CPG, consumer packaged goods. They are not investing in like AI technology necessarily. Head of my investor, he invested in Beyond Meat, made his money there, and they're continuing to invest in consumer packaged goods. They are not going to switch. Kavu Ventures, they invested in Oatly. They invested in those chickpeas, chips brand, whatever. They invested in topicals. They are not going to invest in hair care. Do you know what I'm saying? So you have to really find the investors who invest in your category, write them all out. Don't go to the best ones first. I would go to the ones you don't really care about, whether they invest, and just practice pitching them. But the conversation about dealing with investors can get so much deeper though, because there's a whole like dance you do for months around first meetings and second meetings and third meetings. And then there's this diligence process to give them access to all your data. And then they run it through their investment committee to see if you're investable, if they're interested in investing. And that could take months. And so a lot of times people would think that crowdfunding is an ideal because it's like, oh, it could take 6 to 9 months to crowdfund. But I honestly think from start to finish with investing, it takes the same amount of time. And you could still end up taking 40 meetings, 50 meetings, you know? So yeah, there's a lot that goes into someone who actually decides to raise money. If you decide to raise money, I would say, and I'm not typically trying to put my own podcast, but I have a podcast called More Rounds, where I interview my friends who raised $40, $50 million in their startups and how they did it. And I would check that out because it's just so dense, such a dense topic. I couldn't even like boil it down to a couple sentences, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm curious, do you think that your time going to those 50 pitch competitions was well spent? Or was there something that else that you think you could have done that would have gotten you those first investments faster?
You could build a better business. If you build a super profitable business that is growing really fast, you'll catch the attention. You know what I mean? So if you put your head down and only focus on the business, that is also an option. And what do I mean focusing on the business? I mean, talking to your customers, interviewing them every 6 months, surveying them every 6 months. I mean, fixing the conversion rate on your landing pages and your product pages, figuring out how to offer that is so good that people feel stupid saying no to, reading all the books, Profit First and $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozi and Influencer Robert Cialdini and Positioning by Jack Trout. Like, spend your time doing the work and focusing relentlessly on profit and relentlessly on growth year over year. And then you're like, how are you going to do both? It's possible to do both, but it won't be crazy growth, but it'll be profit. If you look up in 5 years and you have a $5 million business that's profiting $1 million a year, investors will be throwing money at you. So in my opinion, the easiest way to get investment money is when you don't need it. When they look at your business and they look at your books, like, oh my God, you're adding $100,000 to make every month. Oh my God, like you only have 5 employees. Oh my God, like your margins are 90%. Oh my gosh, like you haven't taken on any investors. Please take my $1 million. And that's when they start kind of following you, you know, chasing you. That's typically the position you want to be in when you're dealing with investors. You want them to need you more than you need them.
Well, Kim, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. I've learned so much and you have so many good stories to share from everything that you have done, you know, all the work you put in. So thank you so much for being here. Before we go, just tell the listeners where they can find you, where they can find Curl Mix.
Thank you so much, Gillian, for having me. And you can find Curl Mix at curlmix.com if you like my hair. And if you're interested in investing, you guys can go to weefunder.com/curlmix. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Work Less, Earn More. Now, if you want to learn how to easily scale your course to $100,000 a year or more with one simple funnel, then I would love to tell you about a free training I just put together. So in short, this new free training hacks my sales funnel for you. So what I did was I took one of my highest converting passive sales funnels and I just went through the entire thing and recorded a video showing you every step of the process so that you can see how it works and how it automatically turns leads into paying customers. Then I also recorded another video where I break down my win-win webinar strategy. This is the strategy I use for every webinar because I get the very highest conversion rates with it, converting 10 to 20% of the people who show up for my webinars into paying customers and in a way that feels really good, both for me as I'm presenting the webinar and for the people who are there. They just love these webinars. Then I also recorded a video breaking down my evergreen sales email strategy. So in this video, I go through each and every email in my sales email sequence and I share with you exactly the subject lines of the emails, what the emails are about and the schedule that I send them on. And then finally, in the fourth video of this free training, I explain my big picture sales funnel strategy and how you can implement the system into your own business. Now, if this sounds like it would be helpful to you in figuring out how to have a more effective sales strategy in your business, and you want to see how you could scale a course of yours up to $100,000 a year or more, then all you need to do is head to GillianPerkins.com/breakdown. Again, that's GillianPerkins.com/breakdown. I'll include that link in the show notes for this episode so you can easily find it, or you can just type it into your browser, GillianPerkins.com/breakdown, where you can get this free training. I know this will have a big impact on how you run your business going forward, and not just your business. It's going to have a big impact on your life when you have a consistent stream of passive income coming in through your business. Make sure you get your hands on this free training while it's still available, because I'm always creating new things in my business, so I don't know how long this one will be available for. All right, well, that's all for this episode. Thanks again so much for listening. I'll be back again next week with another one. Until then, stay focused and keep on taking action.